Coming up, what an excellent day for a double axe handle! He's down, Jim, and it doesn't look like he's getting back up. What a move from Captain Howdy. You didn't see that one coming.
We saw it from a mile away, Colonel. You're getting in your old age, not able to see it. It's a classic heel move Howdy's playing.
Oh, I guess I'm just old-fashioned.
Can't trust that trickster in the ring.
He may be small, but he's wily.
And the crowd does not like what's happening to Father Damien here.
No, they do not. Well, howdy, folks, and welcome to Minute 112 of The Exorcist Minute, a show where we endeavor to examine, extrapolate, and excavate The Exorcist, minute by terrifying minute. My name is Colonel my name is Lester Ryan Clark.
And I'm Jim the Jackhammer Steele. I'm Keenan Diaz.
And we'll be your holy guides on this journey through what some have called the scariest movie of all time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so our minute begins with the power of Christ.
And it ends with the power of the Holy Spirit.
That's right. We got a holy minute, Batman. But before we rejoin our dynamic duo in this crazy crusade, it is once again time. Let us open our books and our hearts. Here we go. A reading from the Book of Blatty. Merrin lifted off the stole, took a slight step backward, and then jolted the room with a lash of his voice as he commanded,
I cast you out! Unclean spirit, along with every power of the enemy, every specter from hell, every savage companion.
Merrin's hand at his side dripped vomit to the rug.
It is Christ who commands you, who once stilled the wind and the sea and the storm, who...
Regan stopped vomiting and sat silent and unmoving, the whites of her eyes gleaming balefully at Merrin. From the foot of the bed, Karis watched her intently as his shock and excitement began to fade, as his mind began feverishly to thresh, to poke its fingers unbidden, compulsively deep into corners of logical doubt. Poltergeists, psychokinetic action, adolescent tensions, and mind-directed force. He frowned as he remembered something. He moved to the side of the bed, leaned over, reached down to grasp Reagan's wrist, and found what he'd feared. Like the shaman in Siberia, Reagan's pulse was racing at an unbelievable speed. The fact drained him suddenly of sun. Glancing at his watch, Karis counted the heartbeats, now, like arguments against his life.
It is he who commands you! He who flung you headlong from the heights of heaven!
Merrin's powerful adjuration pounded off the rim of Karis's consciousness in resonant, inexorable blows as the pulse came faster now, and faster. Karis looked at Reagan, still silent, unmoving. Into icy air, thin mists of vapor wafted from the vomit like a reeking offering. Then the hair on Karis's arms began prickling up as, with nightmare slowness, a fraction at a time, Reagan's head was turning, swiveling like a mannequin's, and creaking with the sound of some rusted mechanism until the dread and glaring whites of those ghastly eyes were fixed on his.
And therefore tremble in fear now, Satan!
The head turned slowly back toward Merrin.
You corrupter of justice! You begetter of death! You betrayer of the nations! You robber of life! You—
Karis glanced warily around as the lights in the room began flickering and dimming and then faded to an eerie, pulsing ember. Karis shivered. The room was getting even colder.
You prince of murderers! You inventor of every obscenity! You enemy of the human race!
A muffled pounding jolted the room. Then another. Then steadily, shuddering through the walls, through the floor, through the ceiling, splintering and throbbing at a ponderous rate like the beating of a heart that was massive and diseased.
Depart, you monster! Your place is in solitude. Your abode is in a nest of vipers. Get down and crawl with them. It is God himself who commands you. The blood of—
The poundings grew louder, began to come ominously faster and faster.
I adjure you, ancient serpent.
And faster.
By the judge of the living and the dead, by your creator, by the creator of all the universe, to—
Sharon cried out, pressing her fists against her ears as the poundings grew deafening and now suddenly accelerated and leapt to a terrifying tempo. Reagan's pulse was astonishing. It hammered at a speed too rapid to gauge. Across the bed, Merrin reached out calmly and with the end of his thumb traced the sign of the cross on Reagan's vomit-covered chest. The words of his prayer were swallowed up in the poundings. Karis felt the pulse rate suddenly drop. and as Marin prayed and traced the sign of the cross on Regan's brow, the nightmarish poundings abruptly ceased.
O God of heaven and earth, God of the angels and archangels!
Karis could now hear Marin praying as the pulse kept dropping. Dropping.
Prideful bastard! Marin, scum! You will lose! She will die! The pig will die! Profligate peacock! Ancient heretic who dares to believe that the universe will one day become Christ? I adjure you! Turn and look on me! Yes, look on me, you scum!
The demon jerked forward and spat in Marin's face, croaking afterward.
Thus does your master cure the blind.
God and Lord of all creation, prayed Marin, reaching placidly for his handkerchief and wiping away the spittle.
Now follow his teaching, Marin. Do it. Put your sanctified cock in the piglet's mouth and cleanse it. Swab it with the wrinkled relic, and she will be cured, Saint Marin. Yes, a miracle.
Deliver this servant of...
Hypocrite! You care nothing at all for the pig! You care nothing! You have made her a contest between us!
I humbly...
Liar! Lying bastard! Tell us, where is your humility, Marin? In the desert? In the ruins? In the tombs where you fled to escape your fellow man? To escape from your inferiors? From the halt and the lame of mind? Do you speak to men, you pious vomit?
Deliver.
Your abode is in a nest of peacocks, Marin. Your place is within yourself. Go back to the mountaintop and speak to your only equal.
Marin continued the prayers, unheeding, as the torrent of abuse raged on. Do you hunger, Saint Marin? Here, I give you nectar and ambrosia. I give you the daily bread of your god, croaked the demon mockingly, as Regan excreted diuretically.
For this is my body. Sanctify that, Saint Marin.
Marin continued with the prayers, repelled. Karis focused his attention on the text as Marin read a passage from Saint Luke. My name is Legion, answered the man. For many demons had entered into him, and they begged Jesus not to command them to depart into the abyss. Now a herd of swine was there, feeding on the mountainside, and the demons kept entreating Jesus to let them enter into them. And he gave them leave, and the demons came out from the man and entered into the swine. And the herd rushed down the cliff and into the lake and were drowned, and...
Willie, I bring you good news, croaked the demon. I bring you tidings of redemption,
it gloated.
Elvira is alive! She lives! She is...
Willie stared in shock, and now Carl turned and shouted at her. No, Willie, no!
A drug addict, Willie! A hopeless...
Willie, do not listen!
Shall I tell you where she lives?
Do not listen! Do not listen! Carl was rushing Willie out of the room.
Go and visit her on Mother's Day, Willie! Surprise her!
Abruptly, the demon broke off and fixed its eyes on Karis. He had again checked Regan's pulse, and, finding it strong enough to give her more librium, he was moving to Sharon to instruct her to prepare another injection.
Karis, do you want her?
Leered the demon.
She is yours. Yes, the stable whore is yours. You may ride her as you wish. Why, she fantasizes nightly concerning you, Karis. Yes, you and your long, thick, priestly cock.
Sharon crimsoned and kept her eyes averted as Karis told her it was safe to give Regan the librium. And a composine suppository in case there's more vomiting, he added. Sharon nodded at the floor and started stiffly away. As she walked by the bed with her head still lowered, Regan croaked at her.
Slut!
And then jerked up and hit her face with a flung bolt of vomit. And while Sharon stood paralyzed and in shock, the Dennings personality appeared, rasping.
Stable whore! Cunt!
Sharon bolted from the room. The Dennings personality now grimaced with distaste, glanced around, and asked,
Oh, would someone crack a window open, please? It bloody stinks in this room! It's simply... Oh, no, don't.
It then amended.
No, for heaven's sakes, don't. Or someone else might end up bloody well dead.
And then it cackled, winked monstrously at Karis, and vanished.
It is he who expels you. Oh, does he, Marin? Does he?
The demonic entity had returned, and Marin continued the adjurations, the applications of the stole, and the constant tracings of the sign of the cross while the entity lashed him again obscenely. Too long, Karis worried. The fit was continuing far too long.
Now she comes, the mother of the piglet.
Karis turned and saw Chris coming toward him with a swab and a disposable syringe. She kept her head down as the demon hurled abuse, and Karis went to her frowning. Sharon's changing her clothes, Chris explained, and Karis cut her short with a brusque, all right, and together they approached the bed.
Ah, yes, come see your handiwork, sow mother, come.
Chris tried not to listen, not to look, while Karis pinned Reagan's unresisting arms.
See the puke. See the murderous bitch.
The demon raged.
Are you pleased? It is you who has done it. Yes, you, with your career before anything. Your career before your husband. Before her. Before...
Karis glanced around. Chris stood paralyzed. Go ahead, he told her firmly. Don't listen. Go ahead.
Your divorce. Go to priests, will you? Priests will not help. Piglet is mad. Don't you understand that? You have driven her to madness and to murder, and—
I can't, face contorted. Chris was staring at the quivering syringe in her trembling hand. She shook her head. I can't do it. Karis plucked the syringe from her fingers. All right, swab it. Swab the arm. Over here.
In her coffin, you bitch! Bye!
Don't listen, Karis cautioned Chris again. And at this, the demonic entity jerked its head around, its red-laced eyes bulging fury.
Yes, about you.
Chris swabbed Reagan's arm. Now get out, Karis ordered, as he poked the hypodermic needle into wasted flesh. Chris fled from the room.
Yes, we know of your kindness to mothers, dear Karis,
croaked the demon. The Jesuit blenched, and for a moment did not move. Then, slowly, he drew out the needle and looked into the whites of Reagan's eyes, as out of her mouth came a slow, lilting singing in a sweet, clear voice like that of a very young choir boy.
Tantum ergo sacramentum.
It was a hymn sung at Catholic benediction. Karis stood bloodlessly as it continued, weird and chilling. The singing was a vacuum into which Karis felt the horror of the evening rushing with a horrible clarity. He looked up and saw Marin with a towel in his hands. With weary, tender movements, he wiped away the vomit from Reagan's face and neck.
Et antiquum documentum.
The singing. Whose voice? Wondered Karis. And then, fragments. Dennings. The window. Drained. He saw Sharon come back into the room and take the towel from Marin's hands. I'll finish that, Father, she told him. I'm all right now. I'd like to change her and get her cleaned up before I give her the composine, okay? Could you both wait outside for a while?
All right, so obviously we don't have all of that in the movie, and I think that's the right choice for the movie. Doing this show has given me a greater appreciation of the film and the story that it's telling. But I have also mentioned how this book, and specifically this scene, have shaped my understanding of the story. I know we joked a little bit on the show about how these lines wouldn't really work in the movie. I do think they would work in a different kind of movie, maybe even in a different horror movie, but not this one.
And yeah, that's a really interesting question. Like, what kind? Like a more Baroque movie? Like, oh, I don't know, something that exists in hell, perhaps. You know, where right, where in hell you can, you know, it's a little more fantastical and there's more of the magic of it, etc.
Actually, that's a really good. I almost, the first thing that came to mind was the Poltergeist series.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Where, because it's got a little bit of that Spielberg touch to it. It's got, I mean, it's already got. Jo Beth Williams as the mom, kind of like shouting at the beast, right? Stay away from my baby.
Yeah, it does get a little purple, I guess. They do talk about like feelings a little bit more in that one.
Yeah, yeah. And I want like this feels like that. This feels like something that, you know, Reverend Henry Kane would be saying to Craig T. Nelson, separated by the, you know, the screen door or something like that, right?
I like this line. So this isn't in the movie, but... Your abode is in a nest of peacocks, Marin. And I can see Reverend Kane for the Poltergeist making it like, your abode is in a nest of peacocks, Marin. Your place is within yourself. Go back to the mountaintop and speak to your only equal.
You're all gonna die.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I could see that. That makes a lot of sense, right? Mm-hmm. Poltergeist 2 and 3, we can have these kind of speeches, but not really in The Exorcist, yeah.
Right. But I mean, like, and that's not to diminish it at all, folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like I was telling Keenan, I was actually kind of nervous about this reading because this is the reading. This is the reason I wanted to do this show, was this moment right mm-hmm. here. Before we even, thought of it as a movies by minute show, I was thinking of having this show be a book club mm-hmm. Where we explore, different horror books, and this would be the first one, and mm-hmm. I would talk about this scene. But I'm glad we're doing it this way, where we get to see the film, and we get to, it's been such a great journey with Ellen Burstyn and Max von Sydow and Jason Miller and mm-hmm. Linda Blair and everybody. So I can't imagine doing it any other way now. But that said, like, I adore this part of the book. Mm-hmm. Especially the point for point tossback of everything that Marin is saying in The Exorcism. Howdy has a different version of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Marin says your abode is in a nest of vipers. He says your abode is in a nest of peacocks. I really, but no, I love it, because it's like you know what your problem is. Mm-hmm. You're so vain and you're mm-hmm. so full of yourself.
You probably think this taunt is about you.
But the way that I read it, and the way that I read it even before mm-hmm. I listened to the audiobook, but Blatty does this also, is Howdy being genuinely angry at Marin for being such a hypocrite, for pretending to be good, right? Because like, mm-hmm. How dare you? Like, mm-hmm. I know you. You are nothing but a peacock. You think God is your equal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't speak to, you think you're the second coming of Jesus, and you can't, it was like, once he could not love this man. I remember, I know that. I was mm-hmm. there.
Right. Yeah, I think that's very interesting, this attack at vanity of, I think both of them. So obviously he's attacking Marin and saying like, oh, any part of you would, and this is really vulgar, but I guess you just read it, so we can mm-hmm. talk about it. Like, this is really vulgar. Like, oh, like his, like your penis would save her because you're right. So holy. And like, geez, that actually really shocked me. Even though I read the book, mm-hmm. that shocked me when you said it out loud. Even more than these, I guess we're so used to these other ones, or your mother sucks cocks in hell or whatever. Right. But that one's like, oh God, oh gosh. And then it's interesting, like, so then Willie comes in, right? We have all these additional people in here,
right?
And he's attacking all of them, yes. Right? Maybe Sharon feels a little left out because there's not a personalized attack towards Sharon.
Well, actually, wait.
What do you have?
This is, so I, okay, that mm-hmm. I'm actually glad that this happened this way as well, because uh-huh. when I first read this,
uh-huh, yeah.
I thought, Howdy says, what is it? Here, let me find
okay.
it. Where is it? Okay, yeah. So he's done telling Willie about mm-hmm. Elvira, right? And then Sharon comes in, mm-hmm. and Howdy turns to Karis and says, "Karis, do you want her? She's yours. Yes, the stable whore is yours."
Oh, I thought that was about, I don't know why I didn't think of that. Sharon, yeah.
Mm, I
and
thought it was
stable problems. I thought that was about Reagan.
Yes, I thought so too. Like, and that was, I was like, oh, of course, because that's. All Howdy does is mm-hmm. like, he's inside Reagan and he's like,
right.
"Hey, do you want to fuck me? Lick me?"
Right,
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And but no, it's like, it's because Sharon went into the room, and so now listen to this. Mm-hmm. She is why she fantasizes nightly concerning mm-hmm. you, Karis. Yes, mm-hmm. you and your long thing, blah blah blah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So and then what does Sharon do in the next paragraph? She blushes.
Mm-hmm.
So is that true?
Well, that's part of what I was... Okay, so she's the stable whore because she's with the horseman.
Right.
So we're not crazy. We have been making fun of... Well, I guess... No, wait. She's not fucking a horseman. She's fucking a horseman. Mm-hmm. Two different things. Okay. So she's the stable whore there. That makes a lot of sense. And then Sharon blushes. So is everything that Howdy says true, because he knows about Elvira? He tells Willie mm-hmm. that, which is very disturbing in this book. That's awful.
Right. Yes.
And then he, he says that Sharon thinks about Father Karis, mm-hmm. Which is, embarrassing to her. Mm-hmm. But then he also says, oh, but Karis, you have a big dick. And that's mm-hmm. that's like this evil thing that he would do, right? Like, mm-hmm. Is that true, or is that vanity or whatever? He doesn't say that about Marin. He just says about right. Karis. So, mm-hmm. so I guess, Father Karis is hung, I suppose.
Yeah.
If like you believe the devil.
Oh, there we go.
like a horseman?
Yeah.
He's hung like a horseman. Yeah. But that's only if you believe the devil here,
right.
Believe the demon.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
But what I think is going on is, you know, it's the mixing lies with the truth.
Right.
Thing, right. Mm-hmm. It's because next person who comes in mm-hmm. Is Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's you who did this, you right. with your divorce and da, 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 da. So I think what's happening is Howdy is not necessarily speaking the truth. Mm-hmm. He is speaking what the victims believe to be the truth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So deep down somewhere, Chris blames herself for all of this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Howdy picks up on that and is like, oh yeah, that's exactly it. That's mm-hmm. it's your fault, right? And deep down somewhere, I mean, maybe not even that deep, but just, you know, probably Sharon has had some kind of like passing thought mm-hmm. about Karis. It's like, wow, he's you know, because he's the hero here. He's mm-hmm. coming in and saving a person that she cares about.
Right.
He's very, very heroic, and he's very stoic, and he's very, you know, and he's a good looking guy, and
right,
he's
sure.
strong, and he's a boxer, and you know, it's like,
and he's forbidden.
And he's forbidden. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah.
So she's probably like, who's not going to have like, you know, a little bit of a thought there. And Howdy's just being like, ah, I caught that. I caught mm-hmm. that. Aren't
right,
you,
right.
aren't you just like a dirty, dirty evil person for thinking
right.
that, you know?
But a charlatan, like someone who we've talked about them, like reads minds, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
Usually they, sometimes they might believe in their ability to read minds because they can read character very well.
Exactly.
Right? So okay, Sharon has a crush on Father Karis. That could be something that a charlatan could do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Elvira being alive is not something that the devil could just, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
If we were at a party and we were with a bunch of your friends, you know, I could just mm-hmm. randomly lash out and say, oh, you know who Lester has a secret crush on is Jan. Oh, you know who Lester has a secret crush on is
right.
Elena. And then eventually I would hit one and it would be, oh, God, and you'd only remember the one that I hit.
Right.
right? right. But he, you know, but Howdy, yeah, knowing Elvira is alive, that's not something that he can mm-hmm. just guess at.
Right. I think he knows that. I'm not doubting Howdy's mm-hmm. supernatural powers here. Like, I think he knows things. And whether he knows it mm-hmm. just because he knows it, like in mm-hmm. the same way that, you know, what does he say? You know, God knows everything. The devil knows almost everything.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there is some, you know, vast store of knowledge that Howdy has. Right.
right.
Or he could have easily just picked it up from Carl's mind.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Right.
Like anytime Carl is in the room, he's probably thinking of Elvira. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just that at one point, Howdy's like, what's this delicious little thing? Like,
right.
oh, okay, I'm gonna put that in my back pocket for later.
Because he's thinking about Elvira as he's taking care of Reagan.
Exactly.
He sees her as a surrogate for
exactly
for saving her can save Elvira, you know.
Exactly. And I mean, there is a we didn't read it in the book, but there is a point earlier. When Karis is still trying to, you know, is like figure out whether this is a demon, and he's mm-hmm. doing like the language stuff, Howdy speaks to Carl in German and says, oh, does your daughter like to dance?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Tanzt ihr Tochter gern? Right. And it was just like, this is before we even knew about Elvira. This is before, Dimmy knew about Elvira. Nobody knew about. So it was just like a very, very weird thing for Reagan to say,
mm-hmm.
and that was like that prompted a conversation with Chris. It's like, oh, do Carl and Willie have a daughter? And
mm-hmm.
it was this whole thing. And then Willie's like, no, she died a long time ago. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, so yeah, like it. I think he'll go with the truth if it hurts somebody.
right.
Yeah. But yeah, but I also like, yeah, this is, that's one of my favorite moments as well. He's on his little soapbox and he is condemning everybody.
Right.
Right. And it's a very kind of like, it's the best kind of devil for me. He's like, this is what's wrong with you. This is what's wrong with you. This is what's wrong with you. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, for my part, like I said, I'm really fascinated by the idea that Howdy seems genuinely angry in this scene in the book. Up to this point in the book, Howdy has been laughing at everyone. He has been sarcastic. He has been disdainful, mocking, condescending. He says everything with a scoff or a smirk, and you get the sense that he's above it all. All of this is a game to him. And mm-hmm. even in this scene, you see him mocking everybody else. He is that classic devil, pointing to each of our characters and exposing their sins or what they perceive to be their sins.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole game, is to get them to believe it. But that's just par for the course for devils. That's what they do. And for the most part, it's all fluff. We get the sense that Howdy really isn't invested enough in these people to be genuinely offended by them or do any sort of like extra research into their, you know, into their minds or their pasts, right? He's just saying what he knows will make them feel bad. And he's having fun while doing it. He's putting on a show. He's doing voices. And at one point, he actually winks at Karis.
Yeah, he's a wrestling heel. He's the bad guy in wrestling ring. He's like, I'm doing this for fun.
How appropriate. This is, we didn't even plan that, folks. But Marin is something else. Mm-hmm. He drops the shtick with Marin. Something about Marin brings out the real Howdy, which is weird to say about a demon. But what I mean is, in those stories about classic devils, we understand inherently that they are liars. Marin says it in this story, you know, he's a liar, the demon is a liar, and that's all they've ever been, is a foil to our heroes. They don't have any motivations or personality outside of harming our heroes. They exist solely to oppose them, and in that way, they're almost like extensions of our heroes, right? Mm-hmm. We have those cartoons with a little angel and the devil on our shoulder, and they're just little versions of us, right? Mm-hmm. That's the gag. You know, they don't have their own identity, and that's why I love Clarence from It's a Wonderful Life so much, right? Clarence is not an extension of George Bailey. Clarence is his own character with his own motivations. He wants to get his wings. He's quirky. He's amiable. He's unassuming. Yes, he's a foil to George, but he's a different kind of foil that, you know, in that he's not just George Bailey in an angel costume, mm-hmm. right? He is paradoxically a human foil to George Bailey in the sense that his personality is completely independent of George, and he just happens to be the type of human that rubs George the wrong way, mm-hmm. right? And I love when stories do that, when they give human qualities to these non-human characters. Folks, we're reading Paradise Regained for our bonus episodes, and we have followed a very human Satan all through Paradise Lost, and now in Regained, he meets Jesus in the desert. You know, it's the command this stone to become a loaf of bread, all that. Mm-hmm. But John Milton Satan is so frustrated by Jesus by the end. He's shouting at him, like, why are you like this? What is it about you? And he breaks down in front of Jesus. He admits he is obsessed with him. He's like, yes, I know who you are. I've watched you since you were born. I don't understand you. What is your deal? And I think we got a similar thing here. Jesus is an affront to everything Satan thought he knew about God. And Marin is an affront to everything Howdy thought he knew about humans. He has everyone else's number. They're all so easy. They're all so predictable. But Marin is the only one he has encountered who walks the walk. He is living proof of what humans can be. And that is a wrench in Howdy's plans because, as we'll see in a few minutes from now, when we get to the scene on the steps, his whole deal, any self-respecting devil's whole deal, is to prove that humans are unworthy of God's love. And Marin is the one human who is proving him wrong. And just like Satan with Jesus, Howdy is obsessed with Marin. He needs to fight him again to make sure he's right. As soon as Marin enters the house, he drops the act. He forgets about everyone else, and he just screams for Marin because Marin is a worthy opponent. And even as he's calling out Marin for his pride, you get the sense that he sees Marin as an equal. And I hate that I keep going back to this. It's the only analog I can think of, but it's Batman and the Joker. The Joker would be insulted that he has to fight any other superhero. He's like, no. Batman's my guy. He's the only one who gets it. And he's the only one I don't quite get.
Okay, so if we don't want to do the Batman one anymore, he's uh-huh. like he's like the Lucky Charms leprechaun and and you, Lester Clark. Uh-huh. and the Lucky Charms leprechaun is like, I don't know what you want with these fucking charms. And you've been following me around my whole life. And I don't get it. And I need to know. So I'm going to, you know, show up at the rec center where you are and have my Lucky Charms out and just wait for you to lose your shit, because that's what you do.
I've tried everything. I've tried red balloons, hearts and stars and
hearts
clovers.
And stars.
I was thinking, it's like, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, no, he's the Trix rabbit.
He's the Trix rabbit who...
Why? What is so special about you?
That you get to eat these,
but I don't. I am on the box. This is my job.
Right. This. General Mills keeps paying him to be on the box, but they won't let him have any. Right. So it's not the Batman and Joker. It's the the Trix Rabbit versus General Mills, who in this world is a real person. Who keeps hiring the Trix Rabbit to be around Trix cereal, but won't allow him to eat any of it. Right.
And then we are the great unwashed in that, and Captain Trix Howdy is just judging us from that box. And we're just like, what is this? Like they're so like just look at them eating like a bunch of animals.
Silly rabbit, Trix, which are named after you, are for kids.
not even eating them correctly. What is that? Like, how much milk are you going to use, kid? This one's using no milk at all. What the hell? Are you psycho? Just judging us forever.
Yeah. I'm on, for some reason, this Wikia is the hero's wiki, and it lists the Trix Rabbit as a hero. I think he's the villain of the world, if there is ever one. There's a villain of the later half of the 20th century, it's the Trix Rabbit.
I mean, he is a sympathetic villain.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
You wonder if, you know, if he had just gotten, you know, a little bit of Trix, like he would have turned out okay. This is clearly nurture and not nature.
Right, yes. They brought him into the world. They've kept this rabbit alive for 70 years against nature in order to tempt him with the cereal named after him and to place him in situations where he'll get close to it just to fuck him over every time.
Yeah.
So let me read you some trivia from hero.fandom.com/wiki/TrixRabbit.
Oh, boy.
Trivia. To many people, the Trix Rabbit is regarded as the most sympathetic cereal mascot, most likely to his constant deprivation of his own cereal for many kids, even if he was on the box of the product itself. All right, so we're not crazy.
No.
Number two. Uh-huh. It is unknown why he can't have Trix cereal, either to teach kids about stealing or possibly because in real life, rabbits can't have sugar or fruit, which is why what the cereal is portrayed as having. So I would argue that's not trivia, that's analysis, and whoever wrote selling themselves short here.
I love the deep pondering of why he, it's like, maybe it's because it's not good for rabbits.
Yeah, maybe. But they've kept him alive somehow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they don't feed him real vegetables, and they don't feed him Trix cereal, but he's alive since, what, 1959? Yeah. Yeah.
He lives on spite.
Hobby, tricking kids into getting tricks. That's quite a hobby for 70 years and never succeeding.
How do you call that a hobby? Like, he's, I would say, trying to trick kids, because I don't think he's succeeded.
Yeah, goals, get the tricks. Occupation, none.
Trix mascot, he has a job. See, he wants, all he wants, all we're saying, folks, is give the Trix Rabbit his due.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a job.
If you call getting tortured a job.
Oh, and Keenan, the hypocrisy of it all. One of them parents is, kid goes off to school. One of them parents doesn't feel like cooking breakfast before work. They're gonna take that Trix box out of the cupboard. They're gonna pour themselves some Trix, and they're gonna eat it right in front of the fucking rabbit. And he's gonna be like, "What?" The rules clearly state that I am not allowed to have this because it's only for kids.
Right. And, the parent tries to justify it. They're like, well, no, it's not for rabbits, clearly. It's for kids, and I'm not doing anything wrong. And you're so vain. You probably think this cereal's about you.
See, and this is the origin of his mission. If I can't have Trix, nobody can have Trix.
Right.
Right. And then he is defeated by the kindness of a child who finally gives him some fucking Trix.
And he's like, oh, this isn't very good. They're all the same flavor no matter what the shape is.
Yeah.
So that's false advertising.
It's a little bit anticlimactic, I guess. It's like... But yeah, okay, here you go. Here's, we'll give all the tricks back. Whatever. You guys have that.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm gonna try carrots. Okay, but anyway, back to The Exorcist. So yeah, that is my take on this scene in the book. This is the scene that made me love the book. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. And all that to say, I am so glad that I saw the movie first and I was affected by it first, because now I can have both of these things and enjoy both of them. And this is a different fight in this room, and it is equally moving and disturbing, and I'm so glad that we have been able to explore both these mediums in this way. But yeah, okay, so let's get into our minute here. We are still on that close-up of our two exorcists. They have invoked the power of Christ 8 times. I did a very brief scan of the Roman ritual, and I had said earlier it didn't appear to be in there. It's not in the book. It's not even in the screenplay. However, I did go back and I checked again, and yes, it is in the Roman ritual.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. I apologize for that. I thought we had stumbled upon something. It's easy to miss because it's not normally repeated like this. It's just...
Oh, yeah. I had skimmed through it, too, and I couldn't see it. Yeah, that must be it. It's just one line.
It's just one sentence in the admonition towards the demon that Marin started doing in the last minute, which means also that they are doing this accurately and in order. There are some parts missing, but you know, that might just be Blatty or Friedkin. Or it could be one of these situations where a priest has the authority to like skip certain parts depending on the situation. And to that point, the repeating of the line here is still somewhat of a departure. They are still going off script, which I really like. This brings the ritual, the words on the page, into the real world. They are using it with real-time application. It's not just, you know, keep your head down and intone the words and everything will be fine. It is, you know, it's not a scripted recitation. They are talking to God and talking to this demon. And Marin's the one who started this, and I like that, right? In this movie, we will have both priests deviate from the ritual and do their own thing. Marin has decided in this moment that God is with him enough so that he doesn't need to stick to a script. And we'll see Dimmy make a similar choice later. His was the one I remembered, but I also like that we discovered Marin taking some liberties with the ritual as well.
Yeah, and I like that. I was questioning earlier, you know, when Marin is like, hey, get me a copy of the Roman ritual, that, you know, Marin probably knows it pretty well. Right. He's like an actor who knows the script well enough that he can, you know, weave and bob and doesn't necessarily need it in front of him. Right.
Right.
So I've wondered about that, why he would need it. And I think, OK, you're supposed to have it with you, you know, as a prop, but also because as a holy relic. But, you know, also there is the possibility that he might not be able to finish the exorcism, which is also written in the Roman ritual. Right. You have two people there in case the one person who does know it backwards and forwards can't finish it.
Right. Right.
Hint, hint. Foreshadowing. But also it's just practical. That just makes sense to have it. Yeah.
Right. And just in case, like in a situation like this where, you know, they have to like repeat a line over and over and over again and they might lose their place. It's like, wait, what comes after that?
You know? Right.
Yeah.
We got to start from the beginning.
And we get a sense that this repetition is being done to regain control of the situation. Something has gone wrong and they need to reestablish control before they can continue the ritual. We also reflected how this could be a good thing, right? Like Howdy is frozen. It's like a boss battle where they temporarily stunned him, right? And now it's like, okay, just wail on him before he wakes up, right? We're not going to get this chance again. Either way, they continue to shout, "The power of Christ compels you." I love the looks on both of their faces. Max von Sydow has this wonderful mixture of command and awe. And Jason Miller is terrified and furious. I love that he now knows deep in his heart that he is fighting an honest-to-God devil. And he's taken it so personally after everything in his life up to this point, right? He has really given it to Captain Howdy right now. I said before, like he just learned that the boogeyman is real, and now he's in the room with his dad. And this is for all those sleepless nights, all those nightmares. He is mad, and I love it.
looking back at this shot, because now we've been looking at this shot of them saying power of Christ compels you for a while now, and it's profile of both of them. Maren is in focus and Karis is out of focus, but they're working as a team, right? And
right.
Maren is certainly leading and Karis is sort of like, okay, are we going again? And sort of waiting. He's like half a word behind Maren.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like that you're differentiating the performances because, yeah, okay, they're on the same page of their team, but they can't see each other and what the other one is doing to match that.
Right.
And so Friedkin hasn't directed them to say, no, let's, Jason, do it a little bit more like this. That's how Max is doing it. Or Max, do it a little more like right. Jason. That's what he's doing. So they're both doing their own thing. And in retrospect, it looks to me like Maren is saying each line over and over again to get Howdy back down onto the bed because he's floating.
Right.
And Karis is saying this to finish the exorcism. Like he's like at each one of these lines, like this could be the line that like gets her out of it. Right. He has all this like focus and yeah, anger and like, this is going to be the end of it. And Maren seems to
this
be
is
going to
be the knockout punch.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maren seems to be more long-term. Like, no, we got a whole night ahead of us if we're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even clock that. That is a brilliant observation. Yeah. Like he could be thinking this is it right
here. This is it. The ninth or 12th time we say this will be the time when the demon goes away. Yeah.
Oh,
but he
like
seems
that.
To like really want it like right now. And Maren seems to be biding his time a little bit more.
Oh, this is Obi-Wan and Luke and he's just a little too eager. He's
right.
You know,
it's the Lucky Charms guy and the Trix rabbit. We're trying to, you know, we're in minute 112 out of 132, and we're trying to find new archetypes to compare our people towards. So we'll do it. We'll figure it out, guys.
Yeah. Now, which one is which? So Maren is playing the long game.
That's
so
Lucky Charms guy.
Gotcha.
The Trix rabbit never, after
he's
70
so
years,
frustrated.
Every single time, he's like, this is going to be the fucking time I'm going to get these things. Right, because leprechauns live longer than rabbits on average.
Right, that's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On average. Right. All right, we cut on the word compels to see another splash of holy water on Reagan as her body slowly begins to lower back down to the bed. And we get the sense that whatever this is, it is working.
Mm-hmm.
Her going back down to the bed is a good thing. We cut again, and we are between our two priests, slightly behind them, watching as Reagan continues to descend back to the bed. Now, I always notice here how Max switches up the intonation.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "The power of Christ compels you."
Mm.
And whether that's a choice or it's just a product of the actors having to say this line so many times, it made me think how seemingly simple, but incredibly hard this scene can be, repeating one line over and over again and keeping it so that the words don't just become words.
Right.
I know there's some people who do like to work like that. They like to strip the words down to nothing so that the meaning is organic in the scene. Anthony Hopkins famously reads his lines 250 times.
Mm-hmm.
So then he doesn't have to, you know, think of the words when they yell action. It's
right.
Just muscle memory. And that way he's free to like fill them with whatever feeling comes up naturally when playing the scene.
The way that I was taught how to learn your lines is Alexander McKendrick, the director of The Lady Killers, he was my directing mentor's mentor. And so what he would do is, even if you wrote the script, even if he was one of the screenwriters, he would rewrite it longhand and then do that. So instead of saying them out loud, he would rewrite them by longhand. And that's how he memorized his lines. That's what I do.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah.
Depends on what kind of learner you are, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, but folks, this is different even from that, right? It's just six words over and over. And you're trying to make it feel like it means something. I think one benefit that's sort of meta is the fact that it's a slightly altered version of what is already in the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And the ritual is the script of the exorcism. So you're an actor reciting a movie script, trying to make the words real, playing a priest reciting from a holy script and trying to make the words real.
Right.
And then I feel like I would play with that. Like, I don't feel it this time, but that's okay. Cause it's like Maren wasn't feeling it this time, so
yeah, he's freaked out because there's a fucking girl floating in front of him. Yeah, it's right? Okay, it's okay, Max. Don't worry about it.
how do they do? Yeah. cut, Maxie. It's a special effect. But our boys continue. The power of Christ compels you. And on the word Christ, we cut back to their faces, which have lowered as they follow Reagan down. Mm-hmm. Marin's lips are wet with spittle, but you see in his eyes, it looks like he is happy or relieved. Some crisis has been averted, perhaps. Control is being reestablished. Dimmy's eyes are shiny. He is still angry. I love it. When they shout it again, he's almost snarling. And again, I know, giving into these emotions whilst battling a demon is probably not a good thing, but folks, we have seen him holding in sadness. He has been so sad this entire movie, but it's been a frozen sadness behind that mask that he has, emotions that he can't or won't access. He has not allowed himself to feel anything, and now it feels like the floodgates are open. It's just so cathartic seeing him yell at the devil, and you just want to cheer for him in this moment. Another cut, and we're back at the lower left corner of the bed just as Reagan settles back down onto the mattress, and the boys utter their final joint invocation of the power of Christ. Actually, Dimmy barely finishes. Mm-hmm. As soon as Reagan touches those sheets, he sort of snaps out of it and rushes over, sits on the edge of the bed, and starts pulling at the straps as Marin continues. He says, "He brought you low by his blood-stained cross."
Yeah, so I'm also noticing, just as you were saying this, so Damien rushes over as soon as, like, okay, the coast is clear, she's on the bed, she looks pretty calm, and he runs over to sit on the bed and next to this nightstand. Mm-hmm. And it looks like some time when I wasn't tracking, the lamp has fallen off on that nightstand. It's sort of like uplighting him, which is interesting. So like things are changing, even like I don't remember like an insert of this lamp falling off or anything, but like we're just sort of someone's keeping track of all the continuity of everything that's been destroyed in the room and how it's moved around. And yeah, so yeah, the lamp has been destroyed. Now we get this really creepy, you know, horror movie lighting from way down there.
It's perfect. I love how like it naturally happened. I think it happened in one of the earthquakes, but
yeah, it must have, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And just now it's like, it's like you couldn't set up a better light.
Right.
But yeah, we cut and now we see what Dimmy is doing, right? As Marin says, "Do not despise my command because you know me to be a sinner." We're zooming in on Reagan as Dimmy is tying her hands together in front of her, and Reagan's face still looks vacant and dead. Mm-hmm. And over it all, we can hear Howdy's breathing. Mm-hmm. What do we think the thought is behind this alternate method of tying? Like, why not just retie her like she was? Like, seems like so much more potential for things to go wrong this way.
Dot, dot, dot. Something's going to happen. Well, yeah. I don't know, because the straps have broken, right? So, like, she's hulked, she hulked her way through those straps. So, and he's not necessarily thinking, okay, let's do it the same way. You know, he's sort of peeling at them and then going, okay, these are broken. You can kind of see him fiddling and making little micro pauses there if you look back at what Jason Miller is doing, of him like, okay, let me do it the way, nope, that's not going to work. And okay, now I'm going to have to sort of hog tie her in front of her. Yeah.
Right. He's improvising on the scene.
Yeah.
Okay.
And her eyes are completely gone, right? They're still just the contacts with just white in them. Yeah.
Right.
But we're setting herself up for a classic wrestling move, the classic heel move. Like, okay, you got me. All you got to do is pin me now. So maybe it's a good time for you to go to the other side of the ropes and get the crowd interested. Again. Right. Yeah. Let's see what happens.
Everybody's cheering. It's like, yay!
I'll be back over here. I'll be subdued when you come back. I'll just take a little rest here. Don't
of course.
Worry
about it. Just to turn your back on me. Just... Yeah.
Classic Howdy.
But before that, we cut to a close-up of Marin as he watches all this. He is pale, and it feels like we have caught him in a moment of awe, beholding the power of Howdy or the power of Christ. We cut back to a close-up of Reagan / Howdy as Dimmy is finishing up tying her hands. We can hear both of them breathing. Mm-hmm. Back to Marin. His eyes are still fixed on Howdy. And I got the sense here that Marin is fully back. Mm-hmm. He's got that piercing, unwavering gaze again. That steel is back in his eyes, at least here. We'll have to see how he looks at Dimmy, but right now he is looking at Howdy, and I think how he says the next line also shows us that he is back in control. He does not shout it. Mm-hmm. He simply intones, almost whispers. He says, "It is God himself who commands you." Mm-hmm. And we hold on his face for a moment longer as we see him hear his own words. He's been catching his breath, still coming down from the shouting, and in this moment you can see that he has regained control, but he is still in awe. He is witnessing God's power, and the quietness of these lines can also be seen as realization, mm-hmm. I think. After a pause, he begins to say, "The majestic Christ commands you." We cut in the middle on the word Christ back to Dimmy. We are behind him and below him, peeking over the edge of the bed. His back is to us, still tying Reagan's hands, but he finishes, turns around to get the foot straps. Again, Jason Miller's face is such a great landscape for light and shadow. The lines are so stark. We cut back to Marin, eyes still on Howdy. He raises his hands to make the sign of the cross as he says, "God the Father commands you." And I love how he does even this little gesture. At one point near the beginning of the exorcism, Blatty describes him making the sign of the cross in a, quote, workaday manner. This is the opposite of that. Mm. The way he is focused on Howdy, it's like he doesn't even see his own hand. He is 100% dialed in. And so now we have seen him make the cross three different ways in this room. We have seen the workaday cross at the very beginning. Mm. We have seen him almost fire it like a gun in the "I cast you out" part. Mm-hmm. And now it's like God is moving his hand. It's like there are two possessed people in the room right now.
Mm-hmm. Is there a positive word for possessed that someone who is with the spirit might say that I'm not thinking about right now?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of is like filled with the Holy Spirit.
Right, right.
Yeah, listeners, if you know, like there is a good version of possessed, or is possessed just one of those kind of like neutral terms that is so associated with evil that we just kind of like automatically think of it that way.
Yeah, or that might be a duck speak word, which is what Orwell calls that type of thing. Like in the appendix to 1984, he's like, "Duck speak. You could attack anything your opponents say politically is duck speak, though they're just making nonsense. Wah, 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 wah." But you could also say, like, if someone makes a good point on your side, say that they're a really good duck speaker. So duck speak is bad when it's them and good when it's you.
So
possession. Ew. But possessed by the spirit. Oh, yay.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
It's duck speak.
We're back to Clancy again.
Right, he's thinking of my pet in the name of Clancy, my duck pet. Say, "Out, unclean spirit. Out like a duck.
Let this demon be like water on the back of..." I love Clancy.
Me too. I guess I still like the horseman, but he's my second favorite mm-hmm. non-real character.
Back to Dimmy. Mm-hmm. So he's still working on those straps. Once again, his body is a black blur, mm-hmm. taking up most of the screen. But behind him, there's movement.
What's that behind him? No, it can't be.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Reagan's hands, and then Howdy's grinning face rises up out of the blackness. And while Dimmy's face is mostly shadow, mm-hmm. we see all of Howdy's face. Mm-hmm. And oh, he looks happy. Mm-hmm. He got him. He tricked him. Or he woke up just in time for a wonderful opportunity. He brings Reagan's tied hands down on Dimmy's back, neck, head.
Somewhere padded, yeah, so that we don't actually hurt Jason Miller.
Right, right. But it's supposed to be his head.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Because he's gonna like pass out.
Right, it's enough to knock him out of frame. And we cut and we watch him slam onto the floor.
Right, it's like a metal chair.
Oh, he's down.
Oh, he's down. He was about to have him out for the count, but now he's down. The crowd cannot believe it.
What a dirty trick.
That's Howdy for you, Colonel.
Oh, that was brutal.
I always said you got to keep an eye on him. So we looked this up beforehand. In wrestling, So Reagan has her hand, because her hands are tied, she's able to use both of her hands as a fist, right?
Right.
And so this is called the double axe handle in wrestling speak. So classic heel move, pretending that you're down for the count and then come back from behind with your double axe handle.
See, folks, we do our research, okay?
We do. Is anyone accusing us of not doing our research?
No, no. I feel like if I was in that bedroom, Howdy would be like, you don't do enough research.
No.
You went on that jog instead of finishing your writing.
No.
But no, folks, Keenan insisted on finding the right term for this wrestling move before we recorded.
Yeah, and that might still be wrong, so you tell us. But like, we read through together several glossaries full of wrestling terms on Wikipedia and then wrestling glossaries everywhere until we finally found it. Because, you know, a lot of our fans, I'm sure, are also wrestling fans. And one of our biggest fans is our friend Cameron, Cameron Balenfant, the writer and the actor. And he's who I go to for wrestling news. And I just realized that, oh, it's too early for me to call Cameron up and ask him. So I was like, okay, I hope we did it right. So that's for you, Cameron. If we did it wrong, let me know.
Yeah.
But okay, while we're talking about wrestling though, before we move on, so there is a wrestler who Cameron Balenfant has taught me about, and his name is Danhausen.
Oh,
do you know
yes.
Danhausen?
Yeah, I know him from Cameron showing
us
all his gifts.
Okay, good. Yeah, so Danhausen is a wrestler, Donovan Danhausen, and he is very popular, and he's a heel, he's a bad guy, but he's really, really funny and really chaotic, so he's like an anarchist, like a Daffy Duck, but he's super fun. So I haven't followed wrestling very much, but I've gone and looked at some of this Danhausen stuff. So Danhausen describes his persona as Conan O'Brien possessed by a demon. And he's been on Conan O'Brien's show to talk about that. Yeah. He refers to himself in third person, like Danhausen thinks this and Danhausen thinks that. And his face makeup is.
Yeah. If you're wondering why we're going on about this guy and you don't know who this is.
Well, you should look him up.
Trust me.
Yeah. But he is.
Actually, before you say anything, Keenan,
okay.
Go Google Danhausen. What is it? Danhausen.
Exactly.
Look at his face. Mm-hmm. We'll wait. And welcome back.
Yes, now you can see. And for those of you who aren't able to look right now because you're driving, thank you for not looking. But he very much looks like Captain Howdy's Eileen Deet's face. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the white with black over it and some red around the eyes. So, yeah. His persona as a wrestler is, this stand-up comedian who has been possessed by a demon. And his catchphrase is, whenever there's something that he likes, he says, very nice, very evil.
Oh, really?
Yes. Very nice, very evil.
I may just become a wrestling fan Actually, I don't know why I'm not a wrestling fan already.
I don't know. Well, you're a fan of a lot of things. I think if you start doing wrestling, you would have to, you know, spend so much time doing it. Yeah.
Now I know. Yeah. It is one of those things because I am, that is my nature. I will lose myself in the things that I
I'll
like.
Watch a WrestleMania every couple of years over at my buddy's house, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Danhausen, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Check them out. But yeah, so Dimmy slams onto the floor, and I think that was his head, definitely, that sound as he hits the floor. Mm-hmm. And he just curls up like a dead bug.
Mm-hmm.
And I see two things in this brief shot. First, the yellow blanket did not fly out the window, apparently.
Oh, thank God. Again, I'm always so worried about that, about losing childhood things.
Yeah, right. And second, I am reminded of an episode way back in March of 2023, a little over 1 year ago, when we were trying to figure out what that was behind the falling medallion in Dimmy's dream. It looked like some sort of ornate pattern, like you would see on a carpet, and I'm seeing this carpet right here.
Oh, my God. All right, I'm going to look at that.
And I'm thinking this is that carpet.
Oh, my God. And then when we looked at it, you were like, I think I know where this is, and you were going to keep it from me. So,
yes, okay. And this is the reveal, yeah.
I'm going to take a look. So we're looking at like minute 48 or so. So Mary Karras goes down into the subway as Damien is running towards the camera to save her. And then the medallion comes down the screen, and behind it is some kind of carpet.
We see like faces in the pattern.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think
that is this exact carpet.
So now we have cause to recall that dream. And remember, we were seeing the medallion fall and the carpet is in the background. Well, now here's the carpet. We know that Demi is wearing the medallion. So I don't know. Maybe something's going to happen soon.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what that is. So, all right. So I'm looking forward to it.
I never saw the movie before.
Yeah, I think absolutely. That's an absolute catch. So good job, Lester.
Yay. Thank you. So now
it's just a coincidence. You're overreading things.
No! Wow. You wasted like 15 minutes of the listener's time with that. God, Howdy, you're so harsh. I know, but really, tell us again about Dickens and Shakespeare. I'm sure you're not just mentioning those authors' names to sound smart. Okay, so we're still on Dimmy, and Merrin is still praying. He says, God the Son commands you. And on Son, we cut back to him to see him calmly finishing up another sign of the cross. And without missing a beat, he lashes Howdy with some more holy water. And I love how this action is both in response to what Howdy did to Dimmy, but also like not reactionary at all, right? His face doesn't change. He doesn't even stop speaking. It's like his hand is working independently of him. And the way he draws back and strikes him with it, it's like he's holding a whip. And we see the contempt on Merrin's face as he lashes Howdy with that holy water.
Yeah, so it is, so Damien has just been brained, right?
Right.
Maybe to death. We don't, you know, Merrin doesn't know yet, right?
Right.
But Merrin just keeps moving forward I was thinking like a well-trained soldier or something in battle, right? And like and then you're like, okay, so you fired on us, so we're going to fire back, but I'm not even thinking about, okay, what happened on our side, because that's going to get us even more hurt or something, right?
Right.
Or like a surgeon, right, who's like operating, and then like, okay, they're telling me over here we were having something wrong with the blood pressure, but that's not my job. I'm over here right now working on this organ, and someone else is going to deal with that. And like, okay, so maybe I need to hurry up or something, but I have to not even draw my eyes over to see that, right?
Right.
Like they'll tell me if there's something that needs to change what I'm doing.
Right. He's not going to sacrifice his part in this and like mess up, you know, just because something out of his periphery happened.
And out of his control even, right?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. We cut to a close-up of Howdy falling into frame back onto the bed and writhing in pain. I get the sense that the pain is real, but you can also see a little bit of a smile on Howdy's face as if it was worth it to get Dimmy like that.
Very nice, very evil.
Yes. Speaking of which, we cut and we're on the floor with Dimmy. The lower left bedpost divides the screen with Merrin standing and looking down at Howdy, hand raised in another sign of the cross. And on the other side of that bedpost, everything is fallen. Everything is broken. The lamp, Howdy, and Dimmy is in the middle. And he is slowly trying to get back up. And he starts almost in the spider walk pose. It's more like a crab walk.
Right, like crab soccer. Yeah.
Exactly. And he inches back over to Merrin's side of the bed as Merrin says, God the Holy Spirit commands you, and makes the sign of the cross one more time.
Right, and Damien is out of the ring. He has 10 seconds to get back in. It's 10! Damien is crawling over to Merrin. 9! Oh, Colonel, he's not going to make it. 8!
He's giving it all he's got.
Yeah, do we think he can get back before the 10 count?
I don't know, Jim. We've doubted Dimmy the Kid before.
We doubted him in his last match against his mother, Mary. But he took her out.
He killed her. He left her alone to die. But folks, we'll have to see whether Dimmy gets back up or not.
4!
In the next minute. But that is all of my notes. Keenan, is there anything else?
No, I think we got it.
All right, folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I've been Colonel Piledriver. No, I've been Lester Ryan Clark. And you can reach me on all the socials as Lester Ryan Clark.
I've been Jim the Jackhammer Steel, but really Keenan Diaz. And you can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Howdy Keenan.
And we want to see you in our listener group.
Compelling conversations.
Go check it out and request to join, and we'll let you in here with us. And thank you to our beloved fans who are giving us a 5-star ratings on iTunes or Spotify. Brother.
Or wherever you listen to our show. We really appreciate it. It's going to help our little podcast grow and find more cool people like you. All right, Keenan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think I am, brother.
Folks, until next time, the power of wrestling compels you.
In this corner, we have Batman and Robin, the dynamic duo. They're doing their stretches. They're ready for this fight.
They didn't need any costumes. They're already wearing something befitting of a wrestler. So that's fine.
Undefeated as a duo, together they have found themselves and they found their special move, Holy Molten Metal Batman. And now we see coming into WrestleMania, Carly Simon.
Carly Simon.
To her theme song, You're So Vain.
She probably thinks this match is about her.
Don't you
turn your back on her. But wait, what's that? Who's her partner there? Descending from the clouds? And Jim, he's got his wings.
He's got his wings, everybody. I cannot believe it.
It's Clarence. And we can now say it's a wonderful match.
Teacher says every time he knocks an enemy on his ass, he gets his wings, folks.
There's going to be a lot of bells ringing.
Carly Simon is beating the crap out of Robin. He doesn't know where he is. Batman's looking over, and here comes the Lucky Charms Leprechaun and the Trix Rabbit.
And here comes their opponents, the Children of the World.
Everyone, a very diverse group of multicultural looking children from all consumer demographics, folks.
Including yours.
Oh, and they are wailing on the Trix Rabbit with a collection of jabs and punches that are a part of a balanced ass kicking.
Never skip it in the morning, folks.
And what's this? The Leprechaun has given up on the Trix Rabbit and is into the stands. He's out of here, folks.
Folks, who's going to fill this vacuum? Wait. Who's that? They're wheeling in on a gurney. Folks, we know who this is. He ate his opponent's liver with some fava beans and some nice Chianti.
That's right. It's Anthony the Welsh Fist Hopkins. 2-time Academy Award winner and 4-time ass kicker.
With his signature move, the cannibal kick.
But wait a minute, who was wheeling him the entire time? I cannot believe it. It's General Mills.
Oh! We got the army in this one.
Mowing down the Children of the World. Whose side is General Mills on?
General Mills is on the side of General Mills.
Oh, God.
He's taken out all the Children of the World who are weak and have no energy because their breakfast consists of sugar puffs that look like they have different flavors and nutrients of all the fruits of the world, but do not, Colonel.
What a long game to play. But the ultimate victory is his. And they're all down with mere seconds as we count 1, 2... 3!
Oh,
and that's the game, folks! 4! 5! Nobody's getting up! 6! 7! I'm actually wondering if they're okay. General Mills, what did you do?
What have you done, General Mills?
To the Children of the World, and also the Trix Rabbit, and Anthony Hopkins.
It's a sad day for wrestling.
But a great day for General Mills.
This episode was brought to you by